This episode is brought to you by Beatrice Forms. Wouldn't it be great to make clothes that fit from the start instead of needing workarounds and tricks? With a Beatrice 3D scan dress form, you can make the most of your precious sewing time and create garments that look and feel amazing.
Unlike a standard dress form, a Beatrice form is made from a smartphone 3D scan of your body, so you can actually use it to make clothes that fit your one-of-a-kind shape. Visit beatriceforms.com/love to sew to get free shipping on your custom Beatrice form. That's beatriceforms.com/love to sew. And now, on to the show.
Hello and welcome. I'm Helen.
And I'm Caroline.
And we love to sew. This is a podcast for makers where we talk about sewing a handmade wardrobe and bring you interviews with inspiring creatives and small business owners in our community.
Today we are tackling the subject of sewing machines. We're going to cover a brief history of the modern sewing machine, what to look for when you go to purchase one, and how to maintain it. We also discuss all the bells and whistles you need or don't need in your next model.
I want literal bells and whistles on my next model.
I want my machine to ring a bell every time I start sewing, like to cheer me on. Like, ding, 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 ding. Hello, Helen.
Hi.
How are
it's
you?
It's like a Broadway moment. Yeah. I'm good. How are you?
I'm really good.
Awesome. We had an exciting weekend because we did our first workshop together.
Oh, yeah, we did.
It was really, really cool to teach a workshop in the Blackbird space and teach one of my patterns and get to do that together. It was awesome.
It was really fun. Mm-hmm. You were an awesome teacher.
Thank you.
And I think we worked really well together.
I enjoy teaching people how to sew. It's one of those things that just is really fun to encourage other people to do.
Yeah.
And pass on some of my knowledge. And it's just a great day hanging out and sewing. What more could you want?
I don't know. I mean, nothing. I didn't want anything more. It was perfect.
Well, we look forward to more workshops in your space.
Yes.
Yeah.
And if you want to hear more about how the workshops went and more catch up, we're talking all about it on Patreon, guys.
Yeah. Comes out the first Friday of every month. And you and I talk about everything that's going on in our personal and business lives.
Yes.
It's really fun. This month was a long one.
Actually. It's a long one. We went into a lot of detail. We gave some behind the scenes scoop. On
the maternity sewing episode.
Maternity sewing episode drama. How's that for a hook?
Hook, line, and sinker.
But yeah, no, that was a fun episode to record. And it just came out this past Friday, mm-hmm. when you guys are going to be listening to this. And if you support us on Patreon, you'll get access to all of our previous bonus episodes.
There's 12, a whole year's worth.
You don't even have to worry about waiting for the next one. You can go and listen to the previous episode and catch up, and then you'll get it in your podcast feed every month.
Mm-hmm. It's pretty fun. I really enjoy those ones.
Me too.
All right. Today, we are saying hello to our listeners in Iceland.
Hello.
Hello. So Iceland is an island and a European country located midway between North America and mainland Europe.
Yes. And Iceland had the first democratically elected female and openly gay prime ministers.
Also, mosquitoes do not exist in Iceland, so it's basically paradise.
I don't believe you.
They don't have mosquitoes. They also don't have forests, apparently. There are no forests.
I need to go.
It's a really cool place to visit. I think their tourism is kind of exploded in the last decade. It's mm-hmm. become a very popular place to visit because of all of its unique things that it's got going on. Very and lack cool. of mosquitoes.
I mean, I'm all about the lack of mosquitoes because yeah. mosquitoes love me. They drink my blood.
Juicy.
Thank you for listening. Yes. All right. So in terms of, I mean, we don't really have much feedback.
No, but we have a couple things we wanted to tell you guys about. The Socialists, we had Jillian Whitcomb on our podcast really early on in 2017.
Yeah, it was like episode, I want to say like 15 or something.
Still an amazing episode. Go back and listen if you haven't already. Mm-hmm. She's running the Socialists along with a team of people, and they're crushing it over there they on their are. Blog. And they're doing this really cool thing. They are doing a survey about sizing in the sewing community, and it's in an effort to get a lot of information in one place that designers like myself can look to figure out our size charts and our blocks and to actually use up-to-date information information because a lot of the size charts that are out there and available in the industry are quite out of date. So it's interesting to have an organization like the Socialists do a survey like this to try to get a lot of information. And they want it to be sort of a living survey. So I think the idea is that they will open the survey up maybe on a yearly basis and keep adding to the information that's there and keep updating it and just have a really interesting resource for us.
I love this. I also like that it's not only focused on one particular size range, but it's really the whole gamut.
It's
anybody can take this survey. It's for everyone.
Yeah.
And I also love the idea of a living survey because you never know, like as pattern designers adjust their size charts and extend their size range and include more, you know, curvy friendly or plus size friendly patterns, then maybe more plus size people are going to join the sewing community.
Exactly.
And then the demographic is going to change. So I'm super into this.
It's really valuable too. I've noticed a lot of surveys popping up. I did one and then there's a lot of discussion happening in the community. And now I think Grainline Studio is doing one. I'm sure we'll see more from other pattern designers. But if you're just getting started with pattern design and you don't have a large audience, it's hard to get enough information by doing a survey to actually make informed decisions. So to have an organization like the Socialists doing it is great. So I really, really encourage all of us to go and fill out this survey. It won't take too long. It's something that we can all contribute to that's going to be really valuable.
Yes.
We'll link it in the show notes.
Of course we will.
And since we love podcasts and you guys obviously love podcasts, I have a list on my blog of the top 10 sewing podcasts. And I also welcome anyone to comment with anything else they're listening to. So it can be a great resource for everyone for sewing podcasts.
Isn't it fun that when we started the show, there were like definitely not 10 sewing podcasts.
No, a lot
out
of them
there.
Have started since we started.
So there's now
a lot
there are of newbies. 10.
Yeah.
10 to discover.
It's amazing.
Yes.
Yeah. So go check that out. Wait, go check that out. No.
Go check it out.
No, you go.
You go. I'll go. I already did. You go.
You go. Okay. And do you want to read our listener question?
Yes, I do. Thank you, Natasha, for sending this in. Natasha says, I am a relatively beginner sewist and have really enjoyed listening to your podcast. I had an idea for an episode. While I'm sure sewing machine maintenance has been suggested, not sure if there's a podcast about this topic, I'm wondering if you could talk about maintenance of other sewing tools. For example, scissors, rotary cutters, pins, needles, etc. I know some people sharpen things like those or they replace them, but when and how do you do these things? And if sewing machine maintenance has not been discussed yet, perhaps this could also be included. Please let me know what you think. Keep up the great work. This was a timely email because it came in last week and we were like in the thick of planning the sewing machines episode.
Yeah.
So I thought it would be perfect to include because these are really good questions.
Yeah, there's maintenance for all different types of things, not just sewing machines. And I have to admit, I'm not a maintainer of tools like pins and needles. So I did have to look up how to go about sharpening these things. And I learned a lot in the process. So we're excited to share that with you. So you can get your shears sharpened. You can find hopefully a local person that does specifically scissor sharpening, maybe a knife sharpening place that will also do scissor sharpening to get your scissors sharpened. You want to go to a professional because just like knife sharpening, there are, you know, you can really mess it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you do want to go to somebody who knows what they're doing. Rotary cutter blades. I've never sharpened one. I usually just replace them and they do need to be replaced fairly often. Pretty much as soon as you are not able to cut through your fabric easily, you should replace it because not only is that going to make it easier for you to cut it out, it's also safer. You don't want to be in situations where you're pressing harder than you need to be or, you know, trying to weigh things down so you can just get that thing to cut through the last few layers. If it's sharp, you'll be safer. I know it's a little counterintuitive, but...
Yeah, and you can buy packages of rotary cutter blades like kind of at a bulk price.
Yeah, buying like 10 at a time versus 3 at a time.
So much cheaper. So it's really worth the investment and that could last you a really long time.
Yeah.
So do that so that you have a sharp blade.
Mm-hmm. And then pins and needles, you can actually be sharpened. Did you know that tomato strawberry pincushion, the strawberry is full of emery powder for sharpening your pins?
I did know that it sharpened pins. I didn't know what caused the sharpening.
Yeah, so it's kind of like a nail file is called an emery board, and it's emery powder, so it has a sharpening quality to it. Clearly, I'm a scientist and I know what I'm talking about. So that little strawberry on the end of the tomato has emery powder in it. And you can just stick your pins in there to sharpen them and then store them in the tomato. Mm-hmm. And I'm not sure if this goes for every single iteration of this design, because I see them at the dollar store and stuff like that. And I don't know if all of them have the emery powder in the strawberry, but I think that's the intention of that design.
I think it's a tomato.
It is. The main thing's a tomato. And the end is a strawberry.
Oh.
There's
two different fruit on this thing?
Yeah, there's the tomato where you put your pins, and then there's a little string coming off the top, and there's a strawberry on the end of the string.
Oh.
In the like classic design.
So it's the strawberry that has the sharpening.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. Isn't that cool?
That is really cool. I did not know that.
I like that you thought I was talking about the big one. You're like, Helen, it's not a strawberry. Yeah, it's a tomato.
I thought you were. I don't know.
Yeah, isn't that neat?
It's really neat, yeah.
So that's one way you can sharpen your pins. You can also use the same method that I'm about to describe here with needles, which is getting an oil stone or a very fine emery board, and then basically holding the needle in your hand and running it backwards along the board while twisting it. I watched a YouTube video about this. We'll put it in the show notes. While twisting it, so you're getting it sharpened on all the edges.
So you're talking about like sewing machine needles?
Sewing machine needles, and you can also do this with your pins.
Interesting.
But sewing machine needles, the video I watched, the guy who was doing it made an interesting point that sewing machine needles are expensive. Yes. And they used to be even more expensive, and people wouldn't just, you know, use them for one project and then chuck them, right? Mm. People actually did sharpen their needles and reuse them for many, many, many projects.
Speaking of chucking needles, I do want to add, since we're on this topic, that if you're disposing of rotary cutter blades or machine needles, pins, anything sharp, please, please, please be safe with that, because we shouldn't be putting like sharp things just in our trash cans and throwing them out. I think we've talked about this before on the show, but it's worth mentioning again. Wrap it in something like bubble wrap, styrofoam.
Duct tape is great for the rotary blades. Just like layer it around and then throw it.
Yeah, I have like an extra pack of rotary blades that's like empty that I have like an X on, and I put my dull blades in there. And then when it's full, I throw that out because then it's protected.
Yeah, and needles, same thing. Like having a little container or case, like a film canister or something that you're putting your old needles into will just help
you
have a place to put those things.
Yes.
Yeah. So they're not kicking around.
Yeah.
Good point.
Yeah.
So that's how you sharpen some of your tools.
Yeah. It's a great question, Natasha. And of course, we're going to be talking all about sewing machines today. So we'll get more into the maintenance of sewing machines a little bit later.
Mm-hmm. We are going to focus on machines. We have another episode about overlockers and sergers planned in the future. So today we're just going to be talking about sewing machines and specifically from the lens of garment sewing.
Yes. And of course, we only have our own personal experience to draw from. So as always, we welcome your feedback. Please do send in your thoughts. We love hearing from you. And we have a feedback fest episode coming up in a couple months. So if you send us a bunch of feedback, we will include it in there and maybe we'll do a little follow up.
Yeah, that would be great. It is hard. One of the challenges when prepping for this episode was the lack of experience that I have with various machines. And we wanted to be able to sort of recommend some machines and give people a lay of the land of what's available, but not having experience with tons of machines kind of limits us. So we're going to be sharing what we do know. And like you said, we welcome all your feedback.
Yes. Okay. Our first little section is about the history of the sewing machine, which I think is really interesting.
It's a long history.
We'll link some of these articles that we pulled from in the show notes if you guys want to do some further reading.
But it's a very dramatic history.
Many players.
We're not even going to talk about all of them today because there were so many names involved in the invention of the sewing machine. And the Wikipedia article goes into a lot more detail. So that's in the show notes. And we wanted to say also that the history of sewing machine would not exist without hand sewing. Hand sewing, of course, came first. The first needles were made from bones and animal horns, and the thread was made from animal sinew. And then when the Industrial Revolution came along in the 18th century, the need to decrease the manual sewing in factories led to the invention of the sewing machine.
So the first sewing machine was invented by Thomas Saint in 1790. And his machine was made for leather and canvas. Mm-hmm. So a bit of a heavier duty situation.
Yeah, it was for his personal use, I believe.
And it was very advanced for the era, but was not ready for wide use.
Mm-hmm. And then an Austrian tailor, Josef Mattersberger, began developing his first sewing machine in 1807 and presented his first working machine in 1814.
So he spent 7 years developing that machine.
Yeah, things used to move slowly. I mean, this whole process took almost, over a century.
Wow.
Yeah.
So the first widely used sewing machine was invented by Barthélemy Timonier.
That's good.
a French tailor in 1829, and his machine sewed straight seams using a chain stitch.
Mm-hmm. And he got a patent for that machine in 1830. And this is an interesting, dramatic part of the story. In the same year, he opened the first machine-based clothing manufacturing company in the world to create army uniforms for the French army. But when other French tailors got wind of his invention, they were afraid that his machine would result in them losing their jobs. So they burnt down his factory while he was still inside, but he did escape.
He narrowly escaped.
Narrowly escaped with his life. And that was kind of the end of his sewing machine story. The next player is Walter Hunt.
Yeah, so the first American lock stitch sewing machine was invented by Walter Hunt in 1832. And I looked this up. Lock stitch is really just the straight stitch that our modern sewing machines do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Hunt eventually lost interest in his sewing machine and sold individual machines without bothering to patent his invention until 20 years later in 1854.
Ooh.
Big mistake.
Big mistake, Hunt. In 1841, British partners Newton and Archibald introduced the eye-pointed needle and the use of two pressing surfaces to keep the pieces of fabric in position.
Ooh.
Very important.
So we're talking about like the throat plate and the presser foot.
Exactly.
Genius. In 1844, John Fisher was the first inventor to bring all the disparate elements of the last century together to create the modern sewing machine.
Mm-hmm. And then Isaac Merritt Singer. Heard that name before. Isaac Merritt Singer did a similar thing in 1851, and Fisher's application for the patent was actually botched. It was, you know, just a clerical error in the patent office, and Singer ended up getting the recognition for the invention of the modern sewing machine.
Ooh, drama.
Yeah, so it could have been Fisher. We could all be sewing on Fishers.
Wow. In 1854, Elias Howe also put these elements into one machine, and he came up with an important improvement on the needle. He invented the needle shape that we use today. So Howe ended up being able to claim royalties from the manufacturers using ideas covered by his patent, including Singer.
Yes. Yeah, so Singer and Howe actually got involved in a very dramatic and long lawsuit dispute about this. And eventually Howe was able to claim some of the royalties, and they both became millionaires. So
despite fighting over the pens.
Yeah, exactly. So I guess everyone won. If there's any historians out there, we'd love to hear more about this.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Absolutely. So there were so many inventors and innovators involved in the process of bringing us the sewing machine. And the invention of the sewing machine is touted as one of the most important inventions of our modern age.
Yeah. I mean, it really revolutionized the clothing industry, and it had a lot of social impacts. Clothing production time dropped by hours, and factory production became a lot more common, which meant that clothing prices dropped. And many women who were previously working, you know, hand sewing garments, either had more time for other domestic activities or leisure activities, or they were able to seek employment, and some of them at the new factories. So it kind of changed the way that women were working with clothes.
Yeah. So in the short term, many women lost jobs making clothes by hand. But as the clothing industry grew due to the invention of the sewing machine, more jobs were created in the long run.
Yeah. And I was also thinking about how this was kind of the very beginning of the fast fashion era.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's interesting to think about that as well.
Yeah.
So that's our little quick dive into the history of the sewing machine. Obviously, there's a lot there, and we are not historians. So please, if you are an expert on the subject, we would love to hear from you.
Yes, please. Okay, so let's talk about starter machines. Mm-hmm. Because if you're just getting into sewing, you might be thinking, what should I go with as my first sewing machine.
Yes. So first, I think you have to think about your personal price range. It's going to be different for everybody. The cheapest sewing machine you can get out there is going to be around $100 to $200. You can buy sewing machines like this at Walmart. And there are a lot of options in this range. There's an article that we'll link in the show notes that has the best sewing machines, and they're all in that cheaper range. And some of them will be decent first machines for trying out sewing. But if you're already committed to sewing, already know that you're going to sew for years, we would recommend going up a tier if you're able. These $100, $200 machines, they are often all plastic and they can just be a little frustrating to sew with.
Yeah, not as able to sew a bunch of different fabrics. Yeah. That kind of thing.
There is one from Singer. It's gray and it's super heavy duty. It's the one they use on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yes.
So it can sew through the sequins. So you know it's good. I think I have a friend who uses that one and, you know, has a pretty good experience with that one. So I think in the cheaper model range, that's one that I would point to.
Awesome. So if you're willing to go up a little bit on price around the $500 range, you're getting a much sturdier machine that's going to last longer. So it's really worth it to go up to this price point if you can. Mm-hmm. Our favorite machine is the Janome HD5000. It's heavy duty, all metal, all mechanical, top of the line, kind of mid-level machine.
Top of the line, mid-level.
Yeah, like top of the line of the mid-level, yeah. If that makes sense.
And this is the one that you purchased for your workshops.
Yeah, so we first used this machine at Camp Workroom Social, and we both kind of fell in love with how powerful it was, mm-hmm. and how it felt really sturdy, and that all-metal construction just really made you feel like you could sew through anything, and we did. We sewed through some really nice heavy denim. And when I was looking further into it, I realized that this is a model that's really popular for schools, places that do workshops and classes, prisons. Apparently prisons use this machine quite often. So it's an interesting model to go for if you're willing to spend a little bit more.
Yeah, I love that it's all mechanical as well. I find at that cheaper price point with the digital machines, mm-hmm. that have the screens,
the computerized,
often there isn't as much money and design put into the UI in those screens. And so that being the user experience or the user interaction and how you interact with that. So the menus are a little bit hard to figure out. Whereas with a mechanical machine, it's like what you see is what you get. You know, everything's on a knob or a dial, yeah. and it's just really easy to see. So I love a good mechanical machine, and I do agree that this model is awesome. So yeah. We will link it in the show notes.
We absolutely will. Okay, so let's talk about investment machines, because if you are getting more and more into sewing and you're ready to put down some serious cash, there are some cool machines out there, mm-hmm. that you can get.
Yes. So you have a fancy machine, a mid-size Bernina.
Yeah. I have the Bernina 530 and I absolutely love it. It was definitely an investment. I think I paid over $2,000 for that machine, which at the time was a pretty expensive machine for me. It was a stretch. It still would be, but I don't have any regrets about it because it has been amazing and I love it. It sews anything. It purrs like a cat. It's quiet and just it's a really powerful machine, and it is computerized.
Yeah,
but with Bernina machines, the inside is all metal, which makes them like really heavy duty, long lasting, mm-hmm. Good machines.
Is there anything that you don't like about it?
I mean, there's always, I think every machine is going to have its quirks. For me, I'm not nuts about the buttonhole attachment. Sometimes it can be a little bit finicky. Mm-hmm.
I think that goes for every buttonhole attachment.
Yeah. And there's so much pressure and nerves around buttonholes. So like it could be me, it could be the machine, who really knows?
Yeah.
But aside from that, no, I really, really like the machine and I haven't had any issues with it.
That's good. It's a model that comes with this cute little like cabinet.
Oh yeah.
to hold your bobbins and your feet. It's so adorable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I really love my Bernina. And I mean, a machine that you're spending this much money on, this is the kind of machine that you're going to be able to keep for 30, 40, 50 years, pass it on to your kids. You know, like it is just, it's a lifetime machine.
Yeah. So. I should hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too.
And I think at this price point, you're really getting a top of the line machine that's going to look and feel amazing. So whether you want to go with Bernina, Pfaff, Singer, Janome, what are the other companies?
Husqvarna, yeah. Baby Lock.
Yeah, any of those big companies that have machines at this price point, that's the top of the line, and they're going to be really nice models. So it's about what features you're looking for and how it feels.
Yeah. And if you can, we highly recommend that you go and try out machines, because these higher end machines, they're coming out with new features every year. So while I love my Bernina 530, there's probably another model out there that is even better, you know, that has different features. And they do sales too. The dealers do sales on different models all the time. So it's always a good idea to go and try that out in person.
Mm-hmm. And we also want to say that you do not need to spend thousands of dollars on a sewing machine to be an amazing sewist. I mean, I have been sewing on a vintage Sears Kenmore that my neighbor gave me.
Yeah.
For the last 5 years, and I've built my whole business on that, and I didn't pay a cent for it. Yeah. So you don't need a fancy machine, but obviously it's nice to have and they're really fun.
Yes. So speaking of vintage machines, I did want to mention that vintage Berninas are also known to be really, really great machines. Yeah. So if you can get your hands on a vintage Bernina, you have scored big time. So if like Craigslist and eBay are good places to look, but also just like local thrift stores, estate sales, garage sales. Mm-hmm. Ask around, like you'd be surprised how many people have like a vintage machine kicking around in their storage room that they are never going to use.
Yeah.
So
even if you just are borrowing it, you know, long-term borrow.
Yeah.
Sometimes turns into a gift in the end, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So yeah, let's talk about vintage machines a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I only have experience with the ones that I own. I have a Brother Super Streamliner that I sometimes use for top stitching, but I pretty much use my little Sears Kenmore for everything. It's a 1966 model. It's kind of a light teal color. It's quite cute. It's all metal. It's super heavy duty. It can sew through anything. And then I have a buttonhole attachment for that. So because it doesn't have a lot of bells and whistles, it doesn't have a buttonhole function or a stitch that you can use for that. So I had to get a Singer buttonhole attachment, and it does fit onto the Kenmore model. And then I can do buttonholes with that. And that's also a little vintage attachment. So they kind of go nice together.
It's cool. So your machine doesn't have a buttonhole like button or function,
yeah.
But when you put this foot on, the foot sort of guides the machine into the buttonhole shape. So
exactly.
It'll make a buttonhole.
It's sort of, I wouldn't call it a foot because it's so big. It's like this giant thing that hangs off the back of your machine. And then, yeah, you turn off your feed dogs. So this attachment is doing the work and it's moving the fabric around and making that shape.
So cool.
It's very cool.
It is a very cool attachment. And I hope that we can see it maybe on Instagram this week.
Yeah, that would be fun. I should do another story of it. I've been meaning to do that and pin it to my highlights because I get questions about it a lot. And you can find them on eBay, garage sales. I mean, all the usual kind of places. Mm-hmm. And they are compatible with a lot of different kinds of sewing machines. So even if you have a machine that does buttonholes, you might want to get one of these attachments because I think they do the most beautiful buttonholes. Just really, really easy to use because you just hit the foot and it does it. There's no, you know, going up to the red line and then making sure that you turn the thing. And like sometimes buttonhole attachments are just annoying. So this one's really simple. So I'll try and do a story about it.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So if you are working with a vintage machine, a lot of the time you can get spare parts online. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I wanted to say is that if you find a vintage machine, a good thing to do, especially if you get it at a really good price, is take it to get serviced right away.
Yeah.
Just have somebody look at it, have a professional check it out, oil it. A lot of the time, these old machines have not been oiled for a very long time.
Yeah, you'll run it and you'll smell the engine.
Yeah, and you'd be surprised. Like, it's like with a car, you have to keep it oiled or your car is just not going to have a long life.
Yeah.
And with a sewing machine too, you've got to keep it oiled, especially those old all metal machines. So take it somewhere to have it serviced and then you will have a great machine to work with.
Yeah. And buying parts online, if you're buying things like feet, you want to pay attention to your shank height. So that's that piece that holds on to your feet. You might have a low shank, you might have a high shank. Some machines have those little like grippy claws that snap onto the feet. Some machines have the actual shank that you kind of screw on the side. So just have a look at what you've got before you go on sites like Amazon and purchase feet. And you should be able to see from the pictures whether or not it's going to work for your machine. Even if it's from a totally different brand, it might work for you.
Yes. And if you're shopping in person and you're trying to figure out if a machine is like a good way to go or not, try to lift it up, because if the machine is really heavy, then that probably means that it's all metal inside. And that's what you want to look for in a vintage machine. If it's light, it's probably mostly plastic, maybe not as vintage as you thought it was. And you probably don't want to go with a mm-hmm. plastic machine if you're buying vintage. You want to go for the all metal heavy duty stuff.
Yeah. And try to plug it in. I know if you're at a garage sale, it can be a little tricky, but hopefully they'll accommodate you and let you plug it in and make sure it works before you buy it. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This episode is sponsored by Beatrice Forms. Beatrice Forms and their unique smartphone 3D scanning system finally makes it possible for you to be your own fit model. Design and fit on a dress form that's shaped just like you. Whether you're tissue fitting or altering ready to wear or a new pattern, working on a Beatrice form helps you easily see and make adjustments in place without any guesswork. No more trial and error fitting in the mirror. You can even drape your own creations from scratch on Beatrice. It's fun and intuitive, even for beginners.
Creating your 3D body model at home is easy. All you need is a friend to record videos of you using the Beatrice smartphone app. Each Beatrice dress form comes equipped with professional features like an adjustable cast iron stand, pinnable bodice, and gorgeous finishing.
Beatrice owners not only report great fit results, but that their forms have profoundly transformed their relationship with their bodies. Working with your body double is a unique opportunity to truly get to know and love your beautiful, one-of-a-kind shape.
Get free shipping on your custom Beatrice dress form now through the end of March. Love to Sew listeners will also enjoy a free 30-minute private consultation to make the scanning process even easier. Visit beatriceforms.com/love to sew for this special offer. That's beatriceforms.com/love to sew.
Woohoo! All right. So what are we looking for in a machine when we're on the market for a new machine?
Well, I think there are just a very basic bare bones list of things that you actually need. So a straight stitch, obviously machines are going to do that, but there is a difference in the straight stitch that machines do. Some of them do a really beautiful, just perfectly straight stitch, and other machines you'll notice have a bit of an angle on them. And so I like to look for ones that do that beautiful, perfect straight stitch.
Yes, definitely. A zigzag stitch.
Mm-hmm. Very important. If you want to sew with knits, especially, having that zigzag option is awesome.
Yeah. And adjusting that presser foot pressure, having a knob for that is really, really handy.
Yeah. Not all machines have this. Some of the cheaper models don't allow you to adjust the presser foot pressure. I think it's a big part of controlling your sewing environment. So looking for that option. And then a buttonhole ability, unless you plan to get that attachment we were talking about, or you already have one, then having a machine that lets you do buttonholes.
So really there's not that much that you need in a basic machine.
And most basic machines are going to have these features.
Yeah. So what about things you don't need?
Well, I don't think that you need speed control. Mm-hmm. A lot of machines have this option. And if you're a beginner, it can be nice to be able to go really slowly. But I think with any machine, you're going to get used to the speed that it goes. It might take, you know, a little bit to get used to, but once you get accustomed to it, it's not going to be something you ever think about again. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's necessary.
No, I don't think so either. So you also don't need to have like a gazillion stitches.
No. In different animal shapes.
Obviously, we're talking about garment sewing here. Yeah. If you're a quilter, you're going to be looking for different things.
Yeah.
But in garment sewing, I thought it would be fun to talk about what stitches you and I actually use.
Sure. Yeah.
So I wrote down mine, straight stitch, obviously. Mm-hmm. Zigzag.
Yeah.
Three-step zigzag.
Yeah.
I really like the three-step zigzag. So it's like a zigzag, but it's going three stitches in one direction and then reverse three stitches. Bar tack. But you can make a bar tack with a zigzag stitch just by adjusting the length and width. So you don't really need that.
I like to turn off my feed dogs, set it to zigzag, and then just manually push it through. Oh, that makes a nice bar tack.
Good tip.
Yeah.
Okay. Buttonhole. Mm-hmm. I use that stitch. I also really like that lightning bolt stitch. That's kind of a stretch stitch for bra making. A lot of the time bras call for that. Not necessary. You can definitely sub in a zigzag, but that's like a nice to have.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it for me. Can you think of anything else that you like using?
I don't have the lightning bolt stitch. Sometimes I use that triple stitch, the one that goes backwards and forwards and kind of gives that faux top stitching effect.
Yeah.
If I don't want to change to top stitching thread, or if I don't have any that it's the right color, I might use that to give that look.
That one's actually also meant to be a stretch stitch.
Yes, it does have a little bit of give, but not nearly as much as a zigzag.
Yeah.
And then I also like the lattice stitch. It's one of the fancier stitches on my machine. I think I have like five fancy, putting that in quotes, options. And it's just a fun take on a zigzag stitch. And I use that on bras because it looks really pretty.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So you can experiment with the stitches that are available to you and see if they stretch. And then if they do, you can use them on your stretch projects for decorativeness.
Nailed it. Another probably not necessary feature is a thread cutter.
I don't have one, so I put this in the not necessary thing, but I'm sure for some people it would be necessary.
I do love my thread cutter on my machine, and the sergers that we just bought for workshops don't have a thread cutter, and like for the first few times I used them, I kept like going back and trying to cut thread on nothing. So it's one of those things that if you have it, you probably get used to it, but if you don't have it, I don't think it's necessary.
Here's my argument for not having one. If you don't have a thread cutter, you keep snips by your machine, and I think you're more likely to trim closer to your project. So when you pull it off the machine, you're going to trim right up against that seam allowance, and that way you've already trimmed it. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you have a thread cutter, you're kind of going to cut like midway, and you have tails, and then you have to trim those tails off later. So you're basically doubling the amount of work that you have to do.
I feel like thread tails are like a whole separate discussion.
It's true.
Because people have different like for me, I am a little bit all over the place with my thread tails. I know you're really good at trimming your thread tails as you go.
I trim immediately when I come off the machine and the starting end too, and I put the threads away.
And I'll never forget our friend Tassia, who I took a bra making class with. She sewed her whole bra without trimming any threads, and then she tried it on for the class, and it was full of all these like thread tails like going all over the place, just like sticking out. It was like a hairy bra. It was so funny, and people were like, "Are you gonna trim that?" And she was like, "Of course,
yeah, at the end."
But just it's very
that's
a
totally valid, yeah,
yeah.
It's true. Anyway, that's my argument for not having a thread cutter.
Yeah, I feel you. I'm picking up what you're putting down. What about self-threading?
Yeah, that's a fun feature that I got to play with once when I was using a higher end digital machine, and like it was cool, but it didn't work every time I pushed the button, so it's kind of annoying in that way. And I thankfully am able to thread the machine, but I know that for a lot of people that's really challenging. So having something like a self-threader would be really handy in that scenario.
Yeah.
So I think it depends on your personal needs.
Mm-hmm. The Bernina 530 has like this little kind of thing that comes down, and
it loops around.
If it's an automatic self-threader because you have to loop your thread and then
I think that's what it is, yeah.
But it definitely does not always work.
Yeah.
So at the beginning, I tried to use it, and then I just got frustrated. And I just thread the machine myself now.
I think you can also buy like handheld ones for your machine if your machine doesn't come with one to help you thread. You also don't need a million different feet.
Yep.
We were going to talk about feet later. Maybe we should talk about it now, though.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
You can buy the feet that you need separately.
Yeah.
A lot of the those higher end machines will come with a lot of feet. Even the Janome HD 5000 comes with quite a few feet. It even has a rolled hem foot, which I'm really excited to play around with.
Yeah.
But you can buy those separately. So don't make that like a deal breaker.
Yeah. Don't let that make the decision for you. Like, oh, but this one has 10 more feet.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So some feet that we love, obviously the regular foot.
A regular foot with a wide opening so that you can do a zigzag or a straight stitch. Mm-hmm. A straight stitch foot just has that small hole, and that's great for doing that perfect straight stitch and not sucking any fabric down into your machine.
Yes. The zipper foot. Mm-hmm. So that is where the little metal part is only on one side, so you can get as close to the zipper as possible as you're sewing.
Yeah.
An invisible zipper foot is another good one, which I think is pretty necessary if you're going to be sewing on invisible zippers.
Yeah. I don't actually have one. I just use my regular zipper foot, but I do think that it makes the process a lot easier. And I've been meaning to pick one up. I just haven't gotten one yet. But it has like a little tunnel in it where the coils for the zipper go, and it pushes them to the side so you can get right in that ditch.
You can really get in there, yeah.
Really get in that ditch.
Get in the ditch. A walking foot?
You have a walking foot.
I wish I did. It was one of those ones where when I was purchasing my machine, there was like another model that came with the walking foot, but it was colorful. It had like a floral print on it.
And I
was like,
don't get me started on prints on machines.
So I like declined the bonus walking foot, which is like a $200 foot with Bernina. Like, it's really expensive, their walking foot, so that I could have like a plain white machine.
I mean, I think you made the right choice.
I think so too, but I would love to have a walking foot, especially if you're sewing with knits. A walking foot is super handy.
Yeah, or doing quilting.
And then there's the buttonhole foot, which is another nice to have one.
Yeah. If your machine does buttonholes, it'll probably come with a buttonhole foot.
Mm-hmm. My favorite foot is the edge stitch foot, or it's also like a stitch in the ditch foot kind of thing. So it has like a piece of metal going down that you can stick into like a crevice or a seam or an edge, and then you can move your needle over so that you get that perfect like eighth of an inch top stitching, or that perfect stitch in the ditch where it's going right into the crack.
Yeah, the crack.
The crevice, the crack, the ditch. It's my favorite foot. I use it all the time.
I don't have one. I should get one.
With you're jeans raving making, about it. It's really handy to get that perfect line. You know,
top
you
stitching just kind right of from the edge.
Push the whatever kind of, if there's an edge, you push it up against the foot, and then you don't really have to think about really eyeballing that eighth of an inch.
Yeah.
I also really love my quarter inch foot.
Yeah. Chloe also is a fan of this one.
Yeah. So it's actually, I think, meant more for quilting, because traditionally quilters always use a quarter inch seam allowance. But I actually started using it in bra making, because most seam allowances in bra making are just a quarter of an inch. So it's really handy to have that quarter inch foot as a guide.
Right. So you just use the edge of the foot as your guide. Yeah. Cool. I have several other feet that came with my mom's Singer Featherweight. And there's this one that's like called the Ruffler. And it's like this giant, crazy looking thing that gathers fabric as you sew. And then I have another one that does bias binding. Like, you, there's like a little pocket you put the binding in and it sews it for you, and rolled hem feet. And oh my gosh, there's so many, and they're so cool looking. I almost want to just photograph them.
That would be cool to see. I'd love to see those.
They're very neat.
Yeah. There are some crazy kooky attachments that you might find, especially in those vintage machines.
Yeah.
So don't be afraid of those feet. Experiment with them. Google them.
Yeah.
And see if you can, you know, figure out what they are.
Yeah. But if you get a good set of feet with your sewing machine, you're good to go.
Yeah. And then the last thing that we wanted to mention in terms of like what to look for, maybe what is not necessary to look for, is that leg control kind of lever that can come with some machines. My Bernina has that.
Yeah.
Where you can lift and lower your presser foot with your leg instead of your hands. So that frees up your hands to hold your project in place, or, you know, like those tricky areas where you really don't want to have one hand doing your back stitch and then the other hand, like, you know, it just gives you a little bit more control. I like my leg.
Would you say it's a necessity?
No, I wouldn't say it's a necessity. But when I use machines that don't have it, I end up like flailing my leg under the table trying to lift the presser.
Oh yeah, you're like wiggling around. Yeah,
like, where is it? But no, I don't think it's a must have.
All right, we have a few other things to consider, not necessarily need to have or not need to have, but just things to think about when you sit down at a machine and you're testing it.
Yes.
So first is the arm on the machine bed and the space around the presser foot. So if you are, you know, planning to do quilting or making coats, things that are bulkier, you do want to have more space there. And some machines have a small amount of space. Some machines have a huge amount of space.
Yeah.
So it's something to think about. And then also there might be a detachable piece on the bed of your machine that comes off to give you an arm that's really handy for doing things like sleeve, bags, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And seam allowance markings are another thing you can look for. Mm-hmm. So make sure that that machine that you're considering has those marks that you want. So the 5/8 of an inch, the 1/2 inch, the 3/8, the 1 inch or whatever.
And that they're easy to see, because some machines are so hard to see, or the lines are there, but they're not labeled. I mean, I think modern machines are more consistent with that, but some of the older machines, sometimes they just don't have seam allowance markings. Mm-hmm.
I mean, worst case scenario, you can always use tape for that.
Yeah.
You know, put a piece of masking tape on there and just draw on your own
seam
markings. But it is nice to have that marking.
And then carrying case or storage. When you're trying out a machine in a store, ask about what it comes with as far as a carrying case. A hard shell is really nice to have, because it protects the machine and it will be easier to carry around if you have a good handle on there and you want to take it to a sewing day or take it to a workshop. Super handy to have if you just have one of those plastic covers. I mean, it'll do you fine if you're just sewing at home, but it's just nice to have that extra protection, mm-hmm. I think.
Yeah. Some of the fancier machines come with like padded kind of almost suitcase style bags.
Yeah.
So yeah, there's lots of different options out there.
Yeah.
Something to consider.
And then servicing plans and warranties, something you want to ask about as well is, do they do, you know, a certain amount of time you can bring it in and have it serviced? Or is there a warranty with the manufacturer of the machine? Just ask about that when you're looking at machines.
Yeah, because if you're buying a machine on Amazon, it's going to be kind of a different experience than buying from a dealer. Mm-hmm. With a dealer, you're not only supporting local, but you're also working with a real person that's going to be able to help you if you have questions, that will probably be able to give you a little primer on how to use the machine, and mm-hmm. that will be able to service your machine in the future. So
yeah, exactly. And then the last thing I thought of was spool pins. Not all machines have two spool pins, so two places to put spools of thread, which is kind of annoying when you want to do a twin needle. If you don't have that second spool pin, you have to sort of jerry-rig something mm-hmm. to make a second thread be available to you. So I think having two spool pins is really nice.
Yes, definitely. Okay, so how about testing out a machine? If you're interested in buying a machine, you probably want to sit down and try it out if you can to mm-hmm. see, is this machine really going to work for you? And the biggest thing I think is bring your own scraps of fabric to test on. A lot of the time at the dealerships, they'll have
cotton.
And like, I remember when I was buying my Bernina, they had like 20 layers of quilting cotton, and they were like, look, this machine can sew through anything. Like, let's keep adding layers. And it was like an infomercial practically where they were like, look, it's sewing through 50 layers of cotton.
You're like, when really, would I ever do that?
Really what you want is to make sure that your machine is going to sew through those fashion fabrics that you're going to be working with on a regular basis. So for me, potential problem fabrics I'm using, air quotes here, are things like chiffon or like a really lightweight lawn. A lot of the time, those fabrics will end up with tension issues on certain machines because
it's
that's
so
where you'll
thin.
Get yeah. it's so thin, and that's where you'll get that kind of angled straight stitch.
Yeah.
So look at that. Ponte is another one that I find tends to have a lot of issues on the lower end machines.
Mm-hmm. Skipping stitches.
Skipping stitches. Speaking of skipping stitches, power mesh, swimwear fabrics, lingerie, mm-hmm. lace, that kind of thing. So bring in those fashion fabrics that you think you're going to be working with. Mm-hmm. And test those out on the machine and make sure that it sews through them really well.
Bring that 12-ounce denim.
Yeah, exactly.
And when you're testing machines, you always, well, not always, but I think it's best to use at least two layers because that's what you're going to be doing most of the time, right? You're mm-hmm. mostly going to be sewing two pieces of fabric together. So don't just run it through the machine a single layer. That's not going to give you a good idea of how it's going to perform.
Yeah.
And you can also bring your own needles. If you're going to be testing out things like stretch fabrics, you want to bring ballpoint needles so that you can get a full appreciation for how the machine's going to run.
Yes.
Because if it's skipping, it might just be because it doesn't have the right needle in there.
True. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you want to use the different stitch options, mm-hmm. test out the features of this machine. So try the buttonhole function, try the different stitch options, play with the tension knobs, yeah. play around with the presser foot pressure, experiment with speed if you have speed control. Even if you don't have speed control, just use the pressure of your foot to experiment. How slow can this machine go? Am I comfortable with that?
Yeah.
How fast does it go? Am I comfortable with that? You know, like try to play around with that.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And get help if you need to. If you want to try the buttonhole function, but you don't really know how it works on the machine, call someone over and get them to show it to you. This is an investment that you're making. So you really need to advocate for yourself in this scenario.
Absolutely.
And try the fancier features too. Try the needle threader. I don't know. For most people, maybe that's not a fancy feature, but try it out if it's available. Some machines have a needle position feature where you can say, like, when I'm not sewing, I want the needle to be down or I want it to be up, and you can set those things. So try them out and see how they work, how they perform, if they're finicky, if they're intuitive, that kind of thing.
Yes.
And if it has a screen, use that screen. Really look at how that performs. See how you move from menu to menu, how you kind of navigate around all of the options, how you change the options. Is it intuitive? Is it confusing? If it's really, really confusing, you know, that might not be the machine for you. Obviously, you can get used to it and you will learn how to use it eventually, but some machines are more intuitive than others.
Yeah. And just ask a lot of questions in general. Mm-hmm. even the obvious questions, ask those questions. Ask about maintenance. Mm-hmm. This is a big one, I think, because you want to know, how are you going to have to maintain this machine? Is it going to need to get oiled between every project? Where do you open it up to clean the lint out? You know, maybe there's an area of the machine that you didn't know could open up. So ask your dealer to show you how they would service the machine at home so that you're aware of the scope of that.
Yeah. Some machines will allow you access to the inside so you can see what's going on and you can oil it yourself, and others will have screws that are there to kind of stop you from going in there, right? So you have to take it to get maintenance in order to get in there. So yeah, asking about what's going on and which parts of the machine you can actually access and see.
Okay, so let's talk about some sewing machine parts that you might not know the name of. I like this one.
Yeah, I know. I was thinking about it because I was looking at diagrams of the sewing machine parts, and a lot of them are named pretty like obviously, like tension knob or stitch width dial, that kind of thing. But there's some interesting ones. So that little metal arm that goes up and down and brings the thread up and down is called the take-up lever.
Ooh, we were wondering about this on Saturday.
I know, I'd forgotten what it was called. I'm like, you know, the silver army thing. It's not very professional. The take-up lever or lever. And then the hand wheel is also called the flywheel, which I actually hadn't heard before. So
I like that.
Yeah, the flywheel.
The flywheel.
Of course, our favorite, the feed dogs. Mm-hmm. Those are those little metal jaggedy things that kind of push the fabric through as you're sewing. They're just underneath your presser foot. Uh-huh. And then the throat plate, which is the area around the presser foot that the needle's going down into. That's often the area you're going to open up to put your bobbin in.
Perfect.
Yeah. And we found a fun diagram of a sewing machine where everything was labeled with not the right label at all, but like really fun things like flux capacitor and like the bobbin area was called the cry hole. Oh,
yeah. The cry hole. We'll post that on Instagram. Maybe. Yeah.
It was really funny. I was laughing so hard.
Yeah.
But it's kind of cool to get to know what things on your machine are called. That will also help you when you go to the store to test the machine. If you're feeling a little uncomfortable, you know, looking at a diagram ahead of time so you can ask questions about specific things and feel like you know what you're talking about.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So if you're going to be servicing your machine, one tip that we have is look online for your machine manual if you don't have it or if you didn't manage to get one when mm-hmm. you purchase your machine. Maybe it's a vintage machine. Do some Googling. A lot of sewing machine manuals are available online to download for free.
Yeah. And or for purchase. Sometimes they're like $5 or $6 and it's totally worth it mm-hmm. to have that manual, especially in a digital format. You can store it in the cloud and you'll never lose it. And that will tell you a lot of information about when to oil it, how to oil it, if you are going to be oiling it yourself, where to put the oil, all of that stuff. So it's really a good thing to get if you don't have one.
Yes. And sewing machine oil is pretty easy to find. Mm-hmm. You can get it on Amazon. Most like craft stores will sell it.
Mm-hmm. Or Joann's, Fabricland. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's a good thing to have on hand because a lot of the time, if your machine is feeling really clunky or if it's loud, if it's making a weird noise, a lot of the time it's because it needs a good little lubrication.
Yeah, exactly. And you can also do some other things to make your machine last longer in between servicing. And that's to clean the dust out with a little brush. Sergers often come with a little brush. You can use your serger brush or you can just use a paintbrush that you have on hand that's clean just to brush out some of that lint, especially around the bobbin casing, keeping it clean and free. If you're working with like fleece or other fabrics that shed a lot.
Yeah, one thing you don't want to do is go at it with like a air can kind of situation. Do not do that. It's not good because you can actually push that lint further into the machine in parts where that you can't even get to. So it's just not a good idea to go
too much pressure
with the canned air. And then oiling, like we mentioned, you can definitely oil your machine to make it last longer. If you're supposed to, actually, I was surprised when the dealer dropped off all the machines for the workshops and I was asking about servicing and she was like, you shouldn't have to oil this machine. It's good.
Yeah, it has its own oil.
Like self-oiling kind of situation.
Deposits inside somewhere.
Yeah, so I imagine eventually I will have to oil it, but she just said it wasn't something that I needed to be concerned about on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So I was pretty pleased to hear that.
Yeah. And then, you know, getting it professionally serviced is a really great idea. We are both not the best at following through on getting things serviced. It's nice if you have two machines because then you can get one serviced and not be without a machine. I know giving giving up your machine for a little bit is kind of hard to plan your life around. But it is good to get your machine serviced once a year if you're sewing on a regular basis. If you're sewing a lot less frequently, like if you're sewing once a month or once every couple months, I don't think you need to service it every year. I think every 2 years would be fine if you maintain it on your own as well.
Yeah.
Take good care of it.
Confession time.
What?
How long since you've professionally serviced your machine?
I've never professionally serviced my machine. But it's vintage and like literally I can see everything.
Yeah.
So I just open it up and I oil it and I have my manual and I put the oil in the spots where it says to put the oil and it runs fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There you go. I have not had my machine professionally serviced in like 4 years.
Wow.
So. But I mean,
the dealers will tell you you should do it.
Yeah, I know. And I really should actually do it. Maybe I will soon. But it's one of those things, you know. You know your machine.
Yeah. Sure. All right. What about machine ergonomics? How do we get comfortable sitting at our machines?
Well, I think that having a good chair is really important. Mm-hmm. Something with back support. Don't sit on a stool when you're sewing, especially if you're doing some long sewing sessions. I personally love having a chair that has wheels on it when I'm sewing, so I can wheel back and forth between my ironing board and my sewing machine and my serger. And I noticed on Instagram, Hannah M. Corey on Instagram has this really cool chair, and she talked about it on stories, and I don't know the model, so I'm going to try to ask her and we'll add it to the show notes. But it's an ergonomic chair that she was really, really into, and she had just gotten it. She was really happy with it because she said she had a lot of back problems sewing, or her back would hurt when she'd sew for long periods of time. And apparently this chair was amazing for that.
Cool.
So it's kind of it looks like a desk or office chair, but it has like almost like bungee cords through the whole thing. So it molds more to your body. It looks like a really cool, really cool product. So do you have any chair tips?
Not really. I have an IKEA chair. We can link it in the show notes. I do quite like it. It has wheels. It doesn't have arms. I think like when you're getting up and down off of your machine, you don't necessarily want to have arms on your chair so that you can move more freely. But I do love the wheels. I also wheel between my machine and my serger just back and forth. And just the one chair. So super handy.
Nice.
I probably could be doing more for ergonomics.
Yeah. Just make sure that you're stretching when you're sewing too. Like as if you're feeling it in your neck, like I think that's where I feel it a lot is like at the base of my neck and my shoulders. Get up, do some downward dog and some forward folds and some sun salutations and just stretch out your body and make sure that you're giving it a little bit of love and give yourself breaks and hydrate. Yeah. Drink water. You know, you don't want to put too much strain on your body because it is a physical activity that we're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something to think about when you're going and testing machines as well, is some of them have a bit more bulk around the foot and have you need to be a little bit lower, kind of look under, versus some that are a little bit flatter on the front so you can see what you're doing. And I think it depends how tall you are and what angle is going to be best for you and where the light is. I mean, there's so many things, right?
Yeah.
So think about how your neck and back are feeling when you're testing machines.
Yeah.
Okay, what about buying online versus buying in person for sewing machines?
Yeah, so we touched on this a little bit, but in my personal opinion, buying in person and testing a machine in person is really, really the ideal way to go about it, the best way to go about it if you can. Even if your local shop doesn't have the machine that you're thinking of getting, going in and trying out what they do have might help you figure out the different features that you like or that you want, mm-hmm. and just kind of get you in that mindset of you're ready to purchase the machine. Let's try some things out.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best way to go if you can.
Yeah, exactly. And if it's not possible to shop in person, looking for a machine that has a decent number of online reviews. I mean, just like any other product, there's so many reviews online for sewing machines. So you can get a good sense of what people think. But if you're looking at a machine that only has like one review on Amazon, like, I mean, you're just not going to get a real good sense for it.
Yeah.
So going with those machines that have lots of reviews, maybe there's a question and answer section that you can check out on Amazon where people are asking questions about the machine and people who own the machine are actually answering those. I think that's really valuable.
Yeah. And if you're in Canada, a tip I have is go on the Amazon US site to check reviews, because there's just so many more reviews on Amazon US. So you'll get a much larger pool of feedback versus Canada, where we tend to have just less people. So less reviews.
Yeah, and you might just have to bite the bullet and ship it from the US and pay the exchange and the
depending on the price. Yeah, sometimes that can be worth it.
Yeah, if it's the machine you want, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And then you can also check sites like Pattern Review for forums where people are talking about sewing machines. There's a lot of chat happening all over the sewing online world about sewing machines, so you kind of have to dig a little bit. But if you have a model in mind, you can often find comment threads or forums about that model and hear what people have to say.
And if you have a machine that you love, consider contributing to an online review space or forum to help other people, you know, maybe sway their decision.
Yeah. Or if you have a machine you hate, definitely contribute.
Yes.
Warn people.
Yeah. And if you're going to invest a lot of money in a machine, you also might want to consider waiting for a sale. Because like I said, those dealers often have sales on different models or have a special offer, like throwing in a walking foot. So, you know, give it some time. Try not to rush into this decision. It's an investment that you're probably going to be making for, you know, years and years of sewing ahead. So
yeah,
don't rush into it.
Wait for that sale.
Ooh, I had an idea too.
I love your idea.
Okay, so I would love to see what everybody else is using. That's one of those things that we don't really share a lot online, is this machine that we're using to make all of these amazing clothes that we're sewing up. So I want everybody to post a picture of their machine or a video or Instagram story, whatever you want, and hashtag it, show me your machine.
I love it. Show me your machine.
Tell us what the model is. If you want to tell us a little bit of history of how you found it, where you found it, maybe how much you paid, if you're willing to share that, and what you like about it, maybe what you don't like about it, because I think this would be a great place for us to reference if we're in the market for a new machine. If there are any listeners out there thinking about getting a machine, it would be a really cool place to go and look and see what everybody else is using.
Yeah.
So show me your machine. I'm going to show you mine.
I'll show you mine.
Okay. So show us yours.
So hashtag show me your machine. And then you can also hashtag the model of the machine. It's not a super common thing on Instagram, but we could build up that as well. So if people are looking at a certain model, then they would have hashtags to reference to. So that would be cool. So throw that in there.
Yes. And we can't wait to see your machines.
Yeah. All right. That was Sewing Machine 101, I think. There's obviously a lot more we could talk about. We can't wait to hear your feedback, your machine suggestions, your pet peeves, anything you want to share with us about machines. And we'll do a follow-up episode on this because, of course, we're sewing and we're sewing on sewing machines.
Yes. It's essential to have a sewing machine. Well, actually, not essential, but you can hand sew everything, right?
That's true.
But we love machines.
Ain't nobody got time for that. That's it for today's episode of Love to Sew. Thank you to our sponsor, Beatrice Forms. Visit beatriceforms.com/love to sew to get free shipping on your custom Beatrice dress form. And Caroline and I are going to be doing this. We're going to put on the bodysuit. We're going to video each other. I'm so excited.
Yes.
Can't wait.
We're recording today in sunny Vancouver, Canada. And you can get in touch with us and get links for everything we talked about in this episode at lovetosewpodcast.com.
And if you're enjoying the show and you want to help us out, you can support us on Patreon. If you contribute $5 or more a month, you'll get access to our bonus episode feed. Go to patreon.com/lovetosew for more info.
You can find me, Caroline, at blackbirdfabrics.com and Helen at helenscloset.ca. Our show is produced by Sam Humphrey.
Thank you, Sam.
And thank you all so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Give it a second. We're going, we're going, we're going, we're going, we're going.